Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Your Owlpost for the week is freshly delivered, and I am just one of your hosts here, Matthew Rishing, and with me, as she is always, the lightly sunned Drea Kaufman.
Hello!
Hey!
Yes, I like lightly sunned is probably the best way to put it.
Well, you know, you've got the pool now, and I've been seeing pictures, and you guys look like you're having an absolute blast.
It's pretty wonderful, especially, I mean... It's getting hot here. It was very, very hot the week before the pool came into play. It was gorgeous the weekend that we could first get in the pool. It was like high 80s, low 90s, which is perfect. You want to be outside, but you're not cooking yet and it's not cold. But it's supposed to start getting hot again. And so I'm really grateful that I can just take the two-year-old out there, put her in, wear her out for an hour or two while she swims around or narrates her own swimming, because apparently my life is Mickey Mouse Clubhouse now. And have it to the point where she comes in and doesn't want to do anything, but basically start her bedtime routine, and I could not be happier. So it's wonderful. It's great. We just started getting some accessories for it so we can like use it at night and stuff. So I'm quite happy. One of my most expensive yet favorite things that we've invested in. So
yeah, that's great.
I'm grateful.
And hey, you know, honestly, being a mom of a young kid, you know, I know that you can wear a kid out very quickly by putting them in water for a few hours and the sun. So, you know, I'm sure her nap times are going better.
I know. She loves it too. And so that's great too. It's, you know, it's teaching her so much and gets her to wear out. Because I mean, in the summer in Arizona or anywhere else, it's really hot. I mean, you're from Texas, and I know there's a lot of people in Southern California and Nevada and all that too, and even some places overseas where like it's just too hot to do anything else outside.
Mm-hmm.
So like how else are you going to work off all that energy and run around? You can only run so many circles around the kitchen before you're kind of sick of it.
It's so true.
You can only clip my wall so many times with your little tricycle before I yell at you, you know, complaints of a mom. But it's great. And you know, we were talking about it before we started recording, but I'm very, very, very fair skinned and the sun is not my friend. So I'm excited, but I'm also being incredibly careful and like loading up the sunscreen and like checking myself every like 10 minutes. Like, oh, am I cooking yet? No, I'm okay. So it's,
well, you just want to make, you're just going to, you do a quick nose check. Somebody cooking bacon, you know, so.
Yeah, no, it's like, I feel when I start to burn, I can kind of like feel it. So I have to stop and be like, can I feel it? No, I'm good. Okay, I'm good. I can keep going. Once I can feel it, it's like it game's off. I lose. Game over. So,
well, we're super excited to be back with you. We had to take a week off last week. It was pretty crazy for both of us. So, but we're so glad to be back as we're here on chapter 3 of The Deathly Hallows, The Dursleys Departing. And honestly, it's a shorter chapter, but it's just so impactful, so we can't wait to dive into it. You could find us wherever you get your podcasts, of course. If you're on Apple Podcasts, please do give us a star rating review. Let people know what you think of the show. Help them find the show. It's one of the best ways to make a show grow if it's a podcast. You can also find us on Twitter at Join Nerd Party. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/thenerdparty. And we've got our website over at thenerdparty.com, where you can go to the contact section. You can send Drea and I an email. We love getting emails. We get those frequently, and it makes our day. And of course, you can find us on Instagram too, at thenerdparty. So, you know, Drea, one of the things I was immediately reminded of in this chapter that really struck me was just how it starts. And it's Uncle Vernon calling Harry. And he just says, "Oi, you." And it mentions 16 years of being addressed like this. Harry had no doubt who was calling him. And it just, this whole chapter really reinforces how bad Harry's life has been, really, for 16 years. And then it just completely, like, shifts at the very end with something completely unexpected, especially even for Harry. And I just, this chapter is so impactful because I think it really goes to show in many ways, you know, Harry has frustrated feelings about his aunt and uncle and even his cousin. But Harry's innate goodness that has shown out throughout this series really creates the change we see at the end, I think, too. And so I really liked the way this chapter kind of ends our time with the Dursleys, because it's the first thing in the book that's hopeful.
Yeah, it's the first thing really in this general story, part of the story arc, right? Even coming off of a lot of the end of the last book where we have, you know, the funeral and we have Ginny and Harry breaking up and we have, you know, we have all of this things that seem very downtrodden, that sigh, it fits it, right? Like that's where we've been with the story, is we're scared. Everything seems harder. Everything's compounding. It's what I like to call, it's the onion of the story, where every layer is a little bit stinkier, makes you cry a little bit more, you know, may or may not be delicious in your meal a little bit more. But yeah, it's to that point. And this is kind of the first moment where we kind of get closure on this chapter of Harry's life. And you know, you're kind of alluding to the end of the chapter. And I think this is one of those where it's harder to speak to it sort of chronologically. Like some of the others, it's really easy just to blow by blow what happened. But here, I think as a whole, you know, it starts out very what you'd expect of our time with the Dursleys over the last 6-7 books. But it's really putting an end to that. And I think the way Harry's handling it, he knows this is sort of the last time he'll ever interact with them, or at least the last time he'll do it unwillingly, right? Because in the past, there's reasons why he's gone back and he's kind of endured it as much as possible. And this is kind of his last hurrah, if you will. And he treats it as such. You know, he does the right thing by them and gets them protection and all of those things. But he also sort of it's kind of a bittersweet goodbye for him, especially given what happens with him and his cousin at the end of the chapter.
Yeah, because it's so fascinating that we get Uncle Vernon, who has made this declaration that they're not going to leave the house. And
I love that he says, oh, he every 24 hours he changes his mind, and he's unpacked and repacked the car so many times. And there's even a little humor here. She mentions, you know, that Dudley packed his weights at some point and Uncle Vernon didn't know it. And it was kind of a hilarious scene with him tumbling out of the car in the driveway with the luggage he didn't expect to be that heavy. You know, she really starts off right out of the gate with some pretty good humor there too.
Yeah, and this whole thing, it, you know, Uncle Vernon, this time, the reason is that he feels like, oh, they just want the house because, you know, the prices have been going up in their area. And Harry's like, why would we want you? Why would I want your house? I have my own house. I was given it by my godfather. I don't need your house. Why would I want this house? Because of the memories? Like, you know, like it's so incredulous. And I like the way, though, that he continues to work with Uncle Vernon here, because regardless of how he feels about his aunt and uncle, he still wants them safe. And I think the overriding, and this is where you can really see this overriding factor of, like, Harry doesn't want anybody to be hurt because of him, even people who have treated him awfully. And so the attitude that he has here towards them, I think, is one of utmost importance in the world that we're in right now. Like, the fact that in many ways, like
in the real world or in the story,
in both worlds.
I mean, really,
right.
In both.
Yeah. But you know, in many ways, Harry is showing a forgiving type of attitude to put them in this position to be saved, even though they don't necessarily even want to believe him. But he knows that it's best for him. And he's saying, look, we're giving you the best we have to offer with protection, even though, of course, Uncle Vernon doesn't think go, because they don't have that Kingsley Stackbolt guy, and he's guarding the Minister for Magic, and our Prime Minister, and shouldn't we have the best, you know? And like, Harry's just so frustrated. And then, of course, Uncle Vernon's like, too, well, why aren't we, like, doing this with the ministry? Why are we doing with this order? Why, you know? And Harry's like, oh, of course, you know, he wants the establishment, you know, because he thinks that's going to be better, because he doesn't understand what's happening. And so I really just like, though, that Harry continues to talk through this with them and try to help them understand. And the only person he actually gets through to is Dudley, because he mentions the fact that the Dementors are the ones that are causing the fog. And he's like, and if you don't remember what those are, just ask your son.
And it's so interesting, because I think that in this sense, she not only uses this chapter and this relationship with the Dursleys to wrap up sort of this history that Harry comes from, right? This is really a turning page. He's moving in to a new chapter of his life. Not for a book pun, but I'll leave it there for y'all anyway. But I think she also is using, you know, the Dursleys, and she kind of always has, as the symbol of the standard people, right? Of the general public. This is those who are not in the Order of the Phoenix. That's those who are not in the ministry. That's those who are not. This is like the general public's understanding of what's happening here, right? They know what they know from what we've talked about a lot with the media and with journalism and things like that. You know, that she uses this to paint yet another grouping of people who are uninformed about the very real situation happening in the world today. And that they don't even realize, to your point, that that's Dementors making all this fog. And, you know, he's pointing out all these reasons why they should trust. And I think it's just also her way of reminding us as readers that, like, not everybody has the insight and the knowledge and the foresight that we have as inside readers and as members of the Order of the Phoenix, you know, by proxy, and all of that. So I think, you know, she also uses that to highlight that it's very dangerous to have such an uninformed or misinformed public at large.
Yeah. And, you know, this is the thing, too. It's like, this is one of those places where that, you know, the whole world is especially this part of the world, is being put in danger. And part of the reason, it's a difficult thing, because, like, would it be any better if everybody was panicking because there was something that they had no ability to fight? You know, like, Muggles have no power against wizards and fury and, you know, Dementors and stuff. They have nothing they can do. So it's honestly, in many ways, I do think it's better that they don't know, because all they could do is freak out, you know. And so,
but then you talk about their faith being misguided and placed in, right, you know, the ministry. Right. You mentioned he's putting his faith in this established group, mm-hmm, which we know from the prior chapters, because it's the last couple. That may not be wise anymore,
right?
And so now, who does, if our journalistic society, if our journalistic avenues and our government have both failed us, essentially, what are you gonna do? And I think it just highlights that huge "what are you gonna do" gap, you know, because Harry and others can fight that themselves. They have the power, they have the knowledge, and they have the willingness. But what is the general public at large gonna do right now, right? Like, it gives, right, this air of there's a big, like, this just, it's piecing together this universe and this kind of, like, current state of being that they're in. And I think the Dursleys have always sort of been that window back from the wizarding world to, like, the Muggle world, and what do they see things like, and how are they processing everything? And so she continues that on by using them in this chapter. And this is going to sort of be the last insight into that world that we get for really the remainder of the book. The remainder of the series.
Yeah. But, you know, Harry hasn't done the thing where he hasn't told them anything. He's told them everything, and they still don't, right, believe him. He's had Kingsley and Mr. Weasley come and talk to them as well. And so it's like, you know, there is only so much they can do. He is not keeping them in the dark. He's let them know, right, exactly what they're in danger from. And again, it's Dudley's experience from the fifth book that makes him say, "Dad, I'm going with these order people." And Harry knows at that moment, like, the decision is over, because once Dudley's made his mind up, they're not going to, you know, go against their Duddykins, you know? So,
I can't believe you said that. Well,
what, you know, Duddykins, like, a little Diddykins in it? Yeah, so, I find that, you know, fascinating, because we are reminded that that Dudley has one of the worst experiences you can have with facing off against the threats that this part of the world is facing off with because of Voldemort. And he makes the right decision. And I love Harry's like, Dudley, that's the first time in your life you're talking some sense. You know, like he's excited too, because he knows then the argument's won. And I think, you know, for Harry, he's trying to do the right thing here. And this, because he needs to be able to breathe easy, that he doesn't have to also worry about them, because he's going to have enough to worry about as this book continues.
I have always maintained in this series that the most dynamic character, which is the one that has the largest character arc from start to finish, the largest character growth, is a tie between Neville and Dudley. Because Dudley goes from this spoiled, selfish, self-centered brat to, I feel like his presence in this chapter really shows that character growth and the fact that he now knows a few things. He, one, is treating Harry with respect that his family has never done. We talk about, I'm going to jump to the end a little bit to make my point. We talk about, Harry has this moment where he realizes the teacup left outside his door was not a trap for him, but was actually a peace offering from Dudley. And that was actually his attempt to reach out to his cousin and establish a relationship, which is a little too late, but he's trying, right? And the fact of the matter is he now knows the power he has in this family, and he's leveraging it for the family's good. Right? Because it would have been very easy for him to keep quiet and let his mom and dad go, or to whine, or to say to the side, I want to go. Like, there's all kinds of other options he had, but he stood up and he spoke what he felt was the right thing to do in the situation. And that's back Harry, even though that message is hard for his parents to swallow. So I think this is that moment where Dudley really becomes an actual character, and it shows how much growth you can have and how the decisions of your past don't have to dictate who you're going to be in the future. You can choose that. And so I love the arc he has and how small it is and how it wraps up here with sort of this mutual respect and understanding between Harry and Dudley, and how had the situation in the world been different, I think they could have forged a way forward together as some sort of family, if you will. Mm-hmm. Just the two of them, not all of them. Just Harry and Dudley. Well, but
yeah, I think
it's so big for such a small minor character to have had such an arc that I think it's super easy to overlook it.
I think you're absolutely right in that sense, because... And the thing that I think is so beautiful here is just the way that this all plays out, because, you know, you've got Hasita Jones and Dedalus Diggle, and, you know, they are coming to pick up the Dursleys. And, you know, there's this whole thing about, you know, Dudley kind of like they're ready to take them, and Dudley just kind of like stopping and not moving. And they're like, Dudley, what are you doing? He's like, I don't understand. Why is he not coming with us? You know, why can't he come, you know? And there's this whole back and forth between Harry and Dudley about this. And Harry, Mr. Dursley is, you know, Vernon's just a jerk about all of this too, you know, talking about how, oh, you're going to be off with some of your lot. And Hasita just, she's like, what in the world is going on? Like, she can't understand this attitude towards Harry. And Harry's like, it's fine. It doesn't matter. Don't worry about it. And she's like, well, it does matter. And, you know, Harry says to her, he's like, they just think I'm a waste of space. And Dudley's like, I don't think you're a waste of space. And it just shocks him, because he's like, he's never heard Dudley say anything nice to him ever. And he's like, well, thanks, you know? And I love that Hasita's like, wait, he just says you're not a waste of space. And Harry's like, coming from him, that's like, I love you, you know? and which is hysterical. You know, Aunt Petunia's crying with all this. And then we get this moment where, you know, Harry is offered a hand from Dudley to shake it as they leave. And it's just this really beautiful moment. And Harry just kind of is blown away. And I think there's, and then I love what he says to him. He's like, you, you take care, Big D. And it's just, there is this moment of like basically reconciliation between these two. And I think it's the first moment here where you see, like, you know, throughout the entire series, Dudley has been Harry's nemesis the same way that Malfoy has been his nemesis and the same way that Voldemort has been his nemesis, right? He's had like a bunch of different levels of nemesises, but Dudley...
He's like his muggle version. Yeah, exactly. His Malfoy. Muggle. I don't know that I would...
Yeah. But you know what I'm
he's
saying?
He's the muggle, like, Malfoy. Yeah, yes. Exactly. He, every stage of Harry's life, every place he finds himself, there's some form of nemesis, yep, or conflict, yep, that he finds himself in. Yes. And Dudley has sort of been the instigator of that, along with the support of Petunia, mm-hmm, and Vernon. So yes, I get what you mean. I get what you mean.
But I think the beauty here is that what happened in the last book, we saw Harry see Malfoy in a new light and feel sorry for him. We also saw him find a way to feel pity for Voldemort, which he never thought was possible. And what do we see in this book? We see him have the ability to shake his hand with his nemesis and part in a way that you get the feeling like if Harry survives this book, him and Dudley may be able to have a better relationship. They could actually have possibly a good relationship, which I think shows the way in which, like, you can never just write people off. You can never, and the way that you treat one another can have an impact. And I think he saved Dudley's life in the fifth book, and here he's trying to save their lives again. And that type of attitude has had an impact on who Dudley is. And it's that goodness that, and even really forgiveness that Harry is offering them, that has made the change. And I think it's such an important, beautiful lesson for everyone.
Yeah. I mean, it's so much about everything you just said is exactly why I think that this chapter and this character that we kind of hate, I mean, we don't hate him nearly as much as we hate Malfoy. We don't like him. He's snotty. We don't get a lot of him, so it's okay to forget about him. But I just, it also shows how we are not forced to become what we're brought up with, right? Like, that's going to have a significant impact on who we are, but it's okay to deviate from those upbringings when you feel like something's off or something should be different, or you have learned for yourself something else. You know, it's the importance of keeping that open mind, both Harry keeping an open mind and Dudley keeping an open mind. And I love this change. I love this character arc. And I love that it also sort of is Harry seeing himself in Dudley, right? He could have, we've talked a lot about Harry could have, you know, the choices that separated Harry and Voldemort and the people that they are and the very innate nature of the choices that they make. And it's kind of the same, right? Like, Dudley could very easily make choices that lead him down one path closer to Voldemort, and yet he's choosing to make different choices that make him more like Harry. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important to acknowledge too. And I think the other side to characters like Dudley and Malfoy are that they're not black and white. They're not pure evil, right? They're not entirely bad to who they are. And that, you know, they make bad decisions and they may do bad things, but deep down who they are is motivated by something other than just what we see in Voldemort, which is just dark, deep, evil badness, right? Like, we want to villainize them, but they're people and they have motivators and feelings. And I think that it's such a unique gift to be able to see the inside of a character like that, where you can sympathize, but not necessarily enable their bad decisions, right? Like, you don't support what they're doing, but you get to see why they're doing it and how they got to be where they are. And I think we'll continue that as we go through the book with some of the other characters that we have come to know over the past, you know, six books.
Well, and I think what it shows is that Harry is open enough as a person to be able to reassess his own preconceptions and or prejudices against people, and to not just see them as a label, right? And he's been able to do that with Malfoy, in the last book. Again, I think he's even been able to, in some ways, do that with Voldemort just a little bit, because the way this book ends is I think, really going to show that.
And one could argue that those characters don't deserve that.
No.
Right? One could argue that they haven't earned that. Nope. So why would you want to give them your sympathy, or why would you want to relate to them? But that, again, goes back to who Harry is. You don't have to earn it. You just get it because you're a human being.
Right. Well, and this is the thing, is that he does that with the Dursleys, and he does that here in a way that, again, has rubbed off on his cousin in a way that is, I think, really beautiful and special, because, again, I think Harry shows us the best of what it means to be a good human being towards other human beings. And Harry's fallible, and he has his own prejudices against people and all of that. But when it comes down to it, Harry does see other people as another person worthy of respect and a chance, right? And I think...
Well, it's like what Dumbledore said a few books ago. Like, Harry represents the very best in all of us.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and what he had said about, when you think about that too, like, Hogwarts has been full of some of these characters that do that. And Cedric Diggory was also one of those people, right? You know, that he saw the best in people. He was one of the best of us, you know, and of course he lost his life to Voldemort. And so, and again, part of that was about their character, you know, of not just writing people off, you know, and not just treating people the way everyone treats everyone, right? Like, you think of Cedric, and he had every right to dismiss Harry, but they end up in this little... this
alliance
right? They start helping each other. And part of that is because, you know, Harry did the right thing for him, and he did the right thing, you know? So it's like, it starts with an action, and it starts with being able to see other people as human beings with dignity that are worthy of respect, regardless of how bad they are, right? And I think that's the beauty here, because everybody here that we're talking about, whether it's Voldemort, whether it's Malfoy, whether it's Dudley, they're all on a level of badness, right? But they've all been pretty bad, specifically to Harry. Regardless of that, Harry still offers, at least, you know, I think we're going to see with Malfoy, we'll see with Voldemort, and we do see here with Dudley, like, he offers them the chance, right, to be different, to change, to make the change. And Dudley does here. And I think, again, I couldn't think of a better message than that. Like, it's beautiful. And I love reading this chapter, and it's a short chapter, but every time I read it, I get pretty emotional, because the moment he takes Dudley's hand, it's just like, it's like the first hopeful thing that's happened to Harry in quite a while. And it comes from the most unexpected place.
Yeah. And there's a level or an element too, I think, where, you know, Dudley sort of finally realizes the seriousness of the situation. Mm-hmm. And I think for Harry, the hand, you know, the handshake is kind of an acknowledgement of him and all of that they've been through together. And the, like you said, kind of the love that actually is there in some way. And I think for Dudley, I think this is the first time he realizes that his cousin might not always be there. And the thing he's taken for granted may actually not, Harry could die. And I don't think that his parents, so his, you know, Harry's aunt and uncle, have truly comprehended that yet. And I think that makes it all the more impactful, right? As we know what he's going to do. And I think this is the moment where someone besides Harry, outside of our normal circle of influence, if you will, truly acknowledges what's happened, the levity.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, the gravity of what's happening here. And I think that'll kind of translate into the next couple chapters too. We'll see people coming to terms with the gravity of the situation, and the impact it's going to have on the individuals that they care about, and the lengths they'll go to stop it, which will make more sense when you read on a couple of chapters. But yeah, I think it's such a touching moment. I think it's a great way to end this chapter in Harry's life and this chapter in our experience in the series and to wrap up the Dursleys as characters. It feels very, very fitting, especially how they describe sort of the drive down the road and that he kind of watches and then at some point they disappear and they're gone and that's it. And it feels very because they're gone.
Yeah.
And that's the presence they've had in Harry's life, right? Like, they're gone. And I do love, before we go too far off track, I did love the one thing we didn't talk about. I do love Harry's description of the last time he tried to run, that his aunt and uncle tried to run from a wizard, and how it was Hagrid that hunted them down. And I love the description, especially because it has no context or bearing on Uncle Vernon, who would have no idea of the difference of skill between Hagrid and Voldemort. But I love knowing the difference and him being like, an oaf chased you down, man. An oaf, the weakest of us, who I love. But man, he found you. What do you think this guy's going to do? Seriously, come on now.
That was
fantastic. I love just this fallacy that he's created. And that I think between, that's my favorite humorous part of the chapter. But yeah, I really love sort of that argument stake that he makes about, and it's a real callback to like the very, very beginning of our journey here. So we get the beginning and the end kind of all at once.
Yeah, it's also funny, too. We learn here that the plans for moving Harry have changed and they don't have time to explain it to Harry what's going to happen. But Mad Eye will explain it all when they get here as well. And so, yeah, I mean, this, you know, this ends in a really interesting way. And there's this last moment where Aunt Petunia looks back at Harry and he gets the strangest feeling like she's gonna say something to him, and then she doesn't, and she turns back and, you know, they leave. And so it is a really interesting thing to have this part of Harry's life wrap up in this way.
Yeah, and I think that moment with Petunia really represents her character, right? There's so much she strived for, and we get this impression she wanted so much more, but she chose this very comfortable, socially acceptable, I'm okay with it. She definitely settled in life is how she's depicted, right? Like she got the house, she got the white picket fence, she got the kid and the husband who has a decent job, and she never really wants for anything. But at the same time, she's not really satisfied, and she's not really happy, and she doesn't really... You know, she's cruel to Harry, but only, you know, it's such a weird dynamic, and we don't ever really get into her character. And I think we could have, not us, like on the podcast, but in general, in the story, you know, from everywhere, from her riding to get into Hogwarts with her sister and all of that. I mean, that's just, that look back just reminds you of what, you know, Harry and what Dudley could be and how he's choosing to be different. And it makes you want to yell at her to be brave. Like, just say it. Just for once in your life, be brave and say it.
Yeah.
And she doesn't. And it's just so fitting for the character we've come to know.
Yeah.
But it's like, you want to shake her and be like, just say it, woman, say it.
Well, and you know, and I think the beauty there is like we were talking about earlier, you know, Dudley's the one who overcomes that, you know, and it all comes down to the fact that, you know, Harry has saved his life twice now. And I think there's just a beauty in that. So, you know, and continuing to...
Or as the Witcher would say, it's a life debt.
Yes, it is. It is. I'm so excited to, you know, continue this book. I mean... What a great way to, you know, kind of wrap up our first kind of wrap up in the book. With this being the final book, this is our first kind of wrap up. So, and we're only the third chapter in.
Yeah, this is like the first set of tears of many, many, many more sets of tears. Like the warm, fuzzy you feel here is... I mean, we're going to have so much love and loss for the next 29 chapters, 31 chapters. I don't remember if it's 32 or 34 chapters, but for the next almost 30 chapters, it's going to be filled with so much. And this is literally that kind of tip of the iceberg where all of that emotional baggage we've been carrying with us for 6 books is like now going to start to get dropped off on our doorstep, and we're going to have to start dealing with it. So I feel like that the handshake is really where it all starts off, and it all goes downhill from there.
Yeah,
it all takes off. We're skiing here, guys.
Well, as we look towards the fourth chapter, Drea, where can everybody catch up with you if, you know, maybe they want to see some pool updates?
Yeah, you can find me floating in the pool. No, I'm just kidding. We joke that I cannot record from the pool because I don't want to get electrocuted. nor do I think you all want the whoosh, whoosh, whoosh of water in the background. You can find me on Instagram at Drea Kaufman or on Twitter at PCFChick.
And you can find me here on Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, Vero under the name MattRushing02 on the network here. I'm also doing Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills. We are talking about Star Wars each and every week. You can also find me doing two shows over on the Trek FM network. One's called The Orb with Chris Jones. When we get a chance, we talk about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. Do the 602 Club, which is our general geek show where we talk about all of the fandoms we love, not just one. And then last but not least, Cinema Stories with my good friend Courtney as we talk about films through the lens of faith. But thank you so much for checking your outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.